Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. And right now, I have an award-winning author with me. She is Nicole Evelina. Nicole writes historical fiction and romantic comedy. Her most recent novel, Been Searching for You, a romantic comedy, won the 2015 Romance Writers of America Great Expectations and Golden Rose Contest. She is the author of three historical fiction novels to date, her debut novel, Daughter of Destiny, the first book of an Arthurian legend trilogy that tells Guinevere's life story from her point of view, was named Book of the Year by Chanticleer Reviews, took the grand prize in the 2015 Chatelaine Awards for Women's Fiction Romance, won a gold medal in the fantasy category in the Next Generation Indie Book Awards, and was shortlisted for the Chaucer Award for Historical Fiction. The sequel, Camelot's Queen, is now available as well, with the final book in the trilogy coming in 2017. On July 25th, she will release Madam Presidentess, a historical novel about Victoria Woodhull, America's first female presidential candidate, which was the first place winner in the Women's U.S. History category of the 2015 Chaucer Awards for Historical Fiction. And I am eager to learn more about this diverse woman, so welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Thank you. We are very pleased to have you here today. Now, Nicole, the tagline on your website reads, Stories of Strong Women from History and Today. Share a reason why you decided to post that.
Well, you know, I was thinking about what is the essence of my work as an author, because I feel like it's more than just to entertain. And I realized that I really do want to tell the stories of strong women. And I started out just women from history. Then I ended up writing a contemporary romantic comedy, so I added on the and today. To me, it's very important for women to have strong role models, whether they are already strong or become strong throughout the course of the book, because the media and popular culture doesn't emphasize that the way that they should. And I believe that reading is one of the ways that women can learn more about themselves and hopefully find somebody to look up to, even if it's somebody fictional.
Absolutely. And reading is a way to change the culture as well.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a mission statement on your website, which I don't think I've seen on any other author's website. So I was very impressed. Why was that important for you to include?
You know, it started out as me defining it for myself because I really felt a stronger calling that this really is what I'm meant to do with my life. And when I looked at why I write historical fiction, I realized that I'm very much drawn to the people in history who are in danger of falling out of the history books or who aren't even in the history books, whose stories might go untold if I don't tell them. And so I decided that, you know, other people can tell the stories of famous people like Henry VIII or Anne Boleyn. That's good for them. But for me, I want to save those women who otherwise, you know, may be lost in the pages of history, you know, even if it's only a few people who read the book, even if it's only for one more generation, so that they're remembered. To me, that's very, very, very important. And then when I wrote the contemporary novel, I realized that I did it for, again, more of a reason than entertainment. I want women who, looking at the typical romance novel, feel marginalized, you know, like I'm over 30. You know, most of your heroines, unless you're reading like a Second Chance at Love type novel, are under 30. I wanted them to feel like, you know, no matter how awkward you are or whatever your personal thing is, there's somebody for you to identify with in a book.
Oh, I love that. Nicole, you are really motivated by a personal passion.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I can feel that. Your book, Daughter of Destiny and Camelot's Queen, those are part of a historical fantasy trilogy, Guinevere's Tale series. So maybe give us a brief synopsis.
Sure. The aim of the trilogy is to retell Arthurian legend through Guinevere's eyes. And in doing that, I'm basically giving you her life story. The first book starts out when she's 9, and the third book will end with her in her 50s. And she does not end her days in a convent. That absolutely drives me crazy that that's the traditional ending for Guinevere, because I feel like she's such a strong woman. Why in the world somebody who's been queen is all of a sudden going to go lock herself away in a convent? I understand that that was the medieval sensibility at the time, and that was the way for, you know, a terrible woman to do penance and make amends, but I don't feel like that fits for today's society. And I believe that something as enduring as Arthurian legend needs to shift and change with the times. You know, the basic story stays the same, but in order for it to be relatable and for it not to die, like so many stories have throughout time, then it needs to be brought up to speed with, you know, really with what people identify with. And then because Guinevere is mythological, I feel like I can do that more than if she was a purely historical person, because then I'd be changing history. Mm-hmm. The trilogy is broken into three parts. Her life pretty much just divided itself nicely into the first book, which would be her time before Arthur, that's Daughter of Destiny, then her time with Arthur as queen, which is Camelot's queen, and then kind of the end of her time with Arthur and her time after him and after the fall of Camelot, which is the third book, Mistress of Legend, which I'm still working on.
Excellent. I understand. Now, I was going to ask if there's going to be a book four, but that would not make sense.
Well, not in the Guinevere trilogy, but I've always planned on telling Isolde a story. Actually, when she came into my head, she demanded it as a character. She says, okay, I'll be here. You know, you can use me in the first book, but I demand my own novel. I'm like, okay. And then I've had a few fans request that I tell Morgan's story, too, which I haven't decided for sure if I'm going to do, but I'm definitely entertaining it.
So you just touched upon something about your characters leading you. Let's talk about that, because I hear that from so many people.
Yeah, my characters are very, very real to me. I actually can't write until they're very real. A lot of times they talk to me, you know, whether or not that's mental illness, I don't know. But, you know, it's not the bad kind of hearing voices, so that's all that matters to me. They will argue in my head, which is hilarious. Guinevere and Morgan went at it several times. And they'll do it in the most ridiculous of locations. I can be driving. I'd be like, guys, I can't write this down. If it's a scene that's meant to happen, it'll happen again in my head to where I can write it down, which is good, or I'll be able to remember it. They're as real to me as, you know, my cousin. They have personalities, they have foibles, I do this thing where I cast my characters as actors and actresses in my head, because it makes it easier for me to be able to hear their voices and to see gestures and just pick up on the things that make them real. So I have a whole Pinterest board dedicated to each of my books, but for Guinevere, because it's such a long series, I have one that's just for the characters, so you can see. I mean, I want everybody to imagine the characters as they see them, but if you're curious as to how I picture them, that is available.
So, folks, if you see Nicole in the grocery store and she says, come on, guys, stop it, and she's all by herself, you'll know that she's writing in her head, right?
Pretty much.
Oh, my gosh. I get that from a lot of people. In fact, I just interviewed somebody a couple nights ago, and he said that his characters are definitely based on people whom he knows, so that he knows how they will react to any given situation. So are any of your characters based on any women you know, just maybe loosely?
Some of them, mm-hmm. There are a couple. I won't say who, but
All of your characters are strong women. Could you write a book where the woman was not such a strong character?
I think if it was a story, the journey that made her strong, mm-hmm. I think I could. But otherwise, I don't know that I would necessarily be attracted to her, because that's so much of what we've seen in popular culture and in history. You know, though women are meant to be, you know, meek and silent, and I just don't go for that. I went to an all-girls high school, and we were definitely, you know, taught to value our voice and speak up. So that has stayed with me ever since.
Oh, that's interesting that experience plays into how you write today.
Very much so. And actually, the school, it was not a boarding school. It was just a regular commuter, you know, 20 minutes mm-hmm. from my house school. We have a lot of Catholic single-sex schools here in St. Louis. And it was actually how I based how Avalon worked and how the I can't speak, how the priestesses and acolytes got along. Is it just, I just drew a lot on how were we when we were teenagers, because teenage girls, no matter the time, don't really change. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had a lot more responsibility in the past than now, but the general personality and the hormones and all of that stuff, the angst that you go through, I personally don't think that ever changes.
Something to think about. I have to think about myself as a teenager here. Your book, Been Searching for You, is a contemporary romantic comedy set in Chicago, and that's a far cry from what we were just talking about. How did that happen?
You know, it's really funny that I swore years ago that I would never write a romance because I am just not a fan of typical romances, and by that I mean like the bodice ripper type stories. I've since learned that the romance genre is much, much wider than that, and there are some really darn good books out there. But, you know, that was one of those stories that I just decided, I was reading and I got frustrated with what I saw as a trend, and it could just be what I was exposed to, that women that were close to my age were, it's always, oh my God, I'm not married yet. I want to find my soulmate. But if I don't get married by the time I'm 30, the world's going to end. And at the time I was 34 years old, and I said, I know, I want to smack you. You know, the world, life goes on after you're 30. It gets better after you're 30. You know, I want to show something for women like me who are over 30 and haven't yet found their soulmate, that you can have your happily ever after. You don't have to listen to, you know, Sex in the City or whatever. You know, it sticks in my head, the episode where Carrie turned 35 and she wasn't married and her friends forgot her birthday, and it was just the biggest tragedy ever. And I wanted to try to counterbalance that with, you know what, whatever journey your life takes you on, it's perfectly fine. And if you want to find love, you will. So that's kind of, it was my story for those of us who have yet to have their happy endings. Maybe you could say I wrote my happily ever after.
There you go. And obviously comedy would have to, and humor would have to come in at that point in time. I can understand why it's comedy.
Yeah, and a lot of the humor just comes from the interaction between the characters. Annabeth is the main character, and her best friend is actually her frenemy named Mia. And Mia is, she's not exactly the nicest woman in the world. She's, you know, she's rich, she's a model, she's always had everything handed to her. So she can be very catty and very stuck up. And, you know, sometimes those two snark at each other in ways that some people who have read the book are like, how can they possibly be friends? You know, and I just thought, you know, it might be a generational thing, but I've had frenemies. Mm-hmm. I've had friends who have had frenemies. You know, it is what it is. If you're in that relationship, it's not going to be all unicorns and roses, but yet that's where some of the humor comes from. Because in some ways, it's not being mean. Sometimes it's a dark sort of humor.
So now you've written both contemporary and historical. Now that you've gotten that all out of you, is there one that you prefer?
I'm definitely historical.
You are? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's where my heart is.
All right. So your inspiration, actually, even though both of these are a little bit different settings, you know, contemporary and historical, they really come from the same inspiration of you wanting to speak out for women and to make sure that they believe in themselves.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Your upcoming book, Madam Presidentess, which comes out July 25th, is a historical fiction about Victoria Woodhull, the first American woman to run for president in 1872. And it's funny, I was just watching Jeopardy the other night, and that was one of the questions. And I think so many people didn't realize that way back then that this actually happened.
Right.
Yeah. Well, tell us about that.
Well, it's definitely not something I learned about in school, and I kind of feel cheated because I didn't. I found out about her, oddly enough, on Pinterest. I was just, you know, fooling around, and there was this picture of a woman from the 1800s who caught my eye, and I thought, oh, I'm going to read the caption. And it had, whoever wrote the caption did a very good job of summarizing her life, talked about how she was the first woman to run for president, first woman to run a stock brokerage on Wall Street. The people who didn't like her referred to her as Mrs. Satan, and that she really made a stir within the suffrage movement. And I was like, okay, anybody who called Mrs. Satan, I have to learn more about her. So I did some research, and as soon as I started reading her story, I'm like, you can't make this stuff up. Mm-hmm. Like, this is definitely, people need to know about this. Why did I not learn about this? And so I decided to make her the subject of my, you know, at the time, next book. And I also knew, I was aware we had a presidential election, this was about 2 or 3 years ago, coming up, and I thought, well, you know, I know Hillary's going to run if, you know, if she does get the nomination. I mean, that would be really cool to have the book out in time for the election so that, you know, while we have the possibility of our first female president happening, then people can learn about the first woman who ran for president who actually made it possible 48 years before women even had the right to vote, which is just crazy.
Is crazy, and that was very ingenious on your part. You're not only an excellent writer, you're smart.
Thank you.
Your cover art, I want to talk about all of your books, but the cover of Madam Presidentess, why did you decide not to show the full face?
You know, there are a lot of pictures of Victoria that exist, and she was a very beautiful woman. But I felt like if I used the historical, a historical picture of her, it would look more like a biography. And I think that's mainly because almost all of the biographies written of her have pictures of her on the cover, which makes sense. And there is another historical fiction about her who has the actual picture. But I fell in love with that picture when my designer showed it to me. And I, again, not showing the full face, the picture to me was just so much stronger without it being a model who obviously wasn't the historical person. There was just something about the picture that showed strength and determination, and that was exactly what I wanted to get across.
And I felt that as well, and that's what prompted me to ask you that question, because I thought it was just perfect.
Thank you.
Yep, you nailed that one. What about the cover art for the rest of your books?
I actually work with a woman named Jenny Quinlan. Her company is called Historical Editorial. She, obviously, based on the name, she focuses on historical fiction, but she does do other things as well. She did the cover for Been Searching for You, which is obviously contemporary. You know, we really go back and forth. It's very much a collaborative process. The very first thing she asked me is, you know, what kind of thing do I imagine? You know, for some of the covers, I had a fairly specific thing in mind. For the others, I had absolutely no idea and just gave her, you know, more like feelings or emotions that I wanted to show. And she's very, very good about giving me many, many options. And then, you know, we go back and forth. The way they ended up, the cover for Daughter of Destiny, I wanted to showcase Guinevere Moore as a priestess because that's a big part of her role in the first book. In the second book, I wanted to make it very clear that this is her queen. So she ends up sitting on a throne in, you know, kind of a non-historical Camelot. The third book, we don't have a cover for it yet, but I want her to have a sword. It's very much her as a warrior. And just so that when you look at the books, you can kind of at least get a feel for the person on the inside that you're going to be learning about.
Mm-hmm. So now, does the artist typically read the books first?
No. No. I'm not sure if she's read any of the books. I hope so by now, but I give her a little summary about what the books are about, but it's, you know, maybe 2 or 3 paragraphs long. Mm-hmm.
Now, you've also won many important awards. How exciting has it been to have your work honored and recognized?
Oh, it's absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, it's these books are my babies, and, you know, I know that's the case for every author, and then for other people to say, yeah, this is really good, it's like, oh my God, I'm not kidding myself, you know, maybe there is actually something going on here. So, yeah, it's when I won Book of the Year, I knew going in that I was going to get the first in category because they had announced those beforehand. But the grand prize and Book of the Year, you know, were ones that it's kind of like an Oscar ceremony. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's all dressed up and you don't know and everybody's nervous. And, I mean, I was shocked when I won grand prize in the category. And then, like, right after that, like, it took me, like, maybe 2 minutes to sit down before they announced Book of the Year, and I made some sort of like guttural noise, like I couldn't even do it again, and I was just so shocked. And my mom happened to be there with me. I mean, we had no idea. So to be able to share that with somebody so special, who's been such an important part of the whole process, the ups and downs, and talking me through every single plot point, and it was just absolutely amazing. And I feel like I will never look at award shows the same again, because those reactions that you see, I always thought, well, they're actors, you know, how much of that you know, is acting, and it's really cynical on my part. But, you know, I can tell you now that those are absolutely real. I mean, when something like that happens, especially when you're not expecting it, it is absolutely mind-blowing.
Oh, such validation, right?
Yes. And as writers, we definitely need that.
And now your mom is a big part of your writing?
Yes. She's always my first reader. You know, I tell her about plot ideas as they come in my head, you know, even ones that I don't know if they'll ever make it or not. Yeah, she's very, very important. And my dad is very supportive as well. He isn't as interested, I think, in reading the books. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does read them, but, you know, my mom will read them two or three times before they're published, you know, to give me feedback on various parts. But I think some of that's because I write for women, too.
Right. How important is that relationship? I love that.
Oh, very much so.
Yep. A little personal. Where do you write, and what does your writing space look and feel like?
I write at home. I actually have a full-time job, so I write mostly on the weekends and vacation days, sometimes in the evening. I usually sit on my couch with my laptop, or, you know, if the weather's nice, I'll take it out in my backyard. It's nothing, you know, grand. I don't really have, I have a second bedroom that I use as kind of like an office/library, but I can't say I really sit in there that often. I can't say that I need anything in particular. If the inspiration's there, it's there. Sometimes I'll go to a coffee house. It just depends.
It's always interesting to find out where people get their mojo when they're writing. And speaking of that, so are there any favorite munchies or drinking while you're working? Anything to snack on every time you write?
No, I really don't have any habits like that. The only thing I know for sure when I write, I cannot drink alcohol. It kills my creativity. Which is crazy because, you know, you hear the myth of the alcoholic writer, and that for me that just doesn't work. I can edit, unless it's a major rewrite type edit, I can edit with a drink, but... Other than that, no.
No, I couldn't either. If I had a glass of wine, I'd be sleeping. I would have no idea what I was doing. So,
well, for some reason, for me, it shuts off that part of my brain where I can hear the characters. I don't know why, but it does.
Well, it does have a dulling effect. I get it. Although I've talked to, when I asked that question occasionally, somebody answered with a 64-ounce cup of Mountain Dew, and somebody said a bottle of wine, not a glass. So it's just interesting to hear the different responses. Coffee and chocolate. So you never know. Now, how important is it for a writer to take writing classes to kind of continue the education on the craft and to join author groups? Do you feel that's important?
I do. They don't have to necessarily be formal classes. You can learn from reading a book. Even if it's not a book on craft, if it's a book that you feel is really well done, if you study what the author has done, like I just finished The Secret Language of Stones, which is a book by M.J. Rose. It comes out next month, I believe. I got it on NetGalley early to be able to review it. And her opening line is so gorgeous. I sat there for about maybe 30 minutes and just kind of tried to think about what makes this line so impactful. Because they say that, you know, your first line is your first chance to hook your reader. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one that everybody should study. As far as joining writers groups, if for nothing else, the support that you get is incredible. Definitely, definitely do it. I'm a part of several, the Historical Novel Society and the Missouri Romance Writers. We call ourselves MORA for short. Mm-hmm. Those are my two big lifelines as far as just being around people who understand what it's like. You know, we can bounce questions off of each other. We can look to each other for critiques. And even just being with your people. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very important. I have a whole section on my website for writers where I list out different resources that I have found helpful just because I feel like, well, if they've worked for me, they may work for somebody else. You know, and everybody is different. You know, as far as craft books go, there are some authors who people swear by that I've read their books and I just don't understand them. The one that really made it click for me was Michael Haig, and he's actually a screenwriter. But there really isn't a huge difference other than the way you put it on the page between screenwriting and novel writing, and he is now doing more things for novelists that I find very, very helpful. And Christopher Vogler as well, who does a lot on the hero's journey.
Yes. Because writing is such a solitary process.
And definitely.
Yeah. How do you know how to improve or if others are going through some of the same thoughts and feelings that you are. So, and there's a lot of online ones as well as physically and locally.
The writing community on Twitter is absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. I've made some really, really good friends. Some of us have met in person, some of us haven't, but I feel like we're going to be lifelong friends, and we've been together online for probably 3 or 4 years now. And we write very different things. We write at very different speeds. You know, there are two of them who write so fast that I'm like, are you even human? And we're at different levels. You know, most of us are either traditionally or self-published. We have one in our particular group who is still querying at the moment. But, you know, we're all very supportive regardless of where you are.
Mm-hmm. Well, talking about self-publishing, maybe give us some advice on that.
Sure. It's something I never thought I would do. I started out the traditional route. I had an agent for 2 years, and the main reason that I decided to self-publish was because I wanted to get Madam Presidentess out there before this election. And with it taking 18 months to 2 years in the traditional world for a book to come out, it came to the point where I knew there was no way the book could come out in time. So I decided to do it myself, and I also had these other three books that were finished, and I really wanted to get them in front of readers to find out, what people thought, because to me there's no way you can really learn from your writing, or I should say there's only so much you can learn from your writing before you have readers to tell you whether they like it or not and what they like and what they don't. That was my reasoning behind it. I would say if you're going to do it, definitely study everything you can. I kind of did a 6-month, 5-month crash course on, pretty much every resource I could find. You know, what's the right way to go about distribution? What are the legal issues around starting your own imprint? It is complicated, but yet it's not in a lot of ways. And I think if you approach it from a very serious business-like perspective, you're going to do fine.
I agree. And it also allows you that level of control that you don't have otherwise.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Now I'm like, that would kind of drive me crazy not to have control over my cover, or maybe not be the person to write the copy that's on the back of the book. And, that all just depends on what house you're with and how they do things.
Yep. So how do you go about marketing your books?
That takes up a lot of my time right now, definitely. I'm very lucky that my day job is actually marketing. Marketing a book is very, very different from doing internal communications, which is what I do most of the time during the week. But I do a lot of social media. I do giveaways. I do a lot of stuff on my blog and with my newsletter list. I'm still growing that. Just a lot of trying to connect and giving fans more than what's in the book. You know, I have a section on my website that's got deleted scenes and, links to my Pinterest board, the things that inspired, and I'm still adding to those even though the books are out. When I see something, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is such and such book, I can add to it. I have the playlist to the books. I do some advertising, but not a lot. I do a lot of guest blogging. Anywhere that you can get out there where somebody's willing to host you, that's an opportunity for exposure because you never know who's going to see it.
Excellent advice. And it is a big job. It's a full-time job. You could be two people doing that.
Definitely.
Yeah. I don't know how you have a day job and write and market at the same time. It's pretty incredible. So what's next for Nicole Evelina?
After Madam Presidentess comes out, I keep saying I'm going to take a break, but I don't know if my brain's going to let me. I'm debating between finishing the third Guinevere book, because there is a draft. It's missing the middle, and I'm not so sure that I like the beginning. The ending is definitely going to stay the same. But I also have a book set, a historical fiction, will be set in World War II, that is really, really gnawing at me to get out of my head. So because I've had so much Guinevere lately, I may give it a bit of a break, because I don't want to force that third book. I want it to be natural, and I want it to be wonderful, and I want people to say, yes, I'm so glad I stuck with this series, rather than it just being, it's okay. I may turn my brain completely different to World War II to tell the story of a woman who was a nun, a Catholic nun, who helped get the Jews out of France. She was captured and sent to Ravensbrück and actually volunteered to go to the gas chamber in lieu of a mother and daughter on Good Friday. And as it turns out, the camp was liberated 2 days later.
Oh, chills.
Yeah, yeah, it's an amazing story, and there's only been one that I can find. There's only been one book written about her in the entire world, and it's somebody's dissertation that's sitting in a library in Lyon, France, and I'm trying so hard to get a hold of it, but I haven't been able to yet.
Looks like a road trip.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it.
Oh my gosh, well, we could look forward to that. Keep us posted.
Definitely.
Yep. Now, is there anything that you would like to talk about that we missed today?
I don't think so.
All right. We did a lot fast, didn't we?
I talk fast. So.
I talk fast as well. So between the two of us, we got it all out. So where can folks find out more about you and where can they purchase your books?
My website is NicoleEvelina.com. It can be purchased pretty much anywhere online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, iTunes. Several of the books are in audio format as well. Daughter of Destiny is out in audio, and so is Been Searching for You, which I will put in a special plug for because my audiobook narrator, Ashley Clemens, is so wonderful. I swear she reached into my head and pulled out the voices exactly like I heard them. I love my other narrator as well, but that one was just so spot on. I have to make a plug for that audio. Camelot's Queen will be out in audio in a couple of weeks. We just finished with final changes. Books are also available at a store in Los Angeles called The Ripped Bodice, which is a romance-only store. But because I have strong romantic elements, even in the books that aren't traditional romances, they carry them there. That's my first in-store option.
Wow. So not only do you have all these awesome books, but they're everywhere that folks can get a hold of them. And I'm going to initially send them to your website, NicoleEvelina.com. That's N-I-C-O-L-E. Nicole. And last name, E-V-E-L-I-N-A, NicoleEvelina.com. Nicole, your energy is so inspiring.
And oh, thank you.
It's been such a pleasure to talk with you today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.